From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. In the past few years, the number of Chinese students seeking an American education has seen a considerable increase. Even American prep schools have been busy recruiting China's best and brightest. This hour, we examine the great U.S.-China student exchange, with a Chinese student studying in Iowa and an Iowan seeking an education in Beijing. Also, study abroad advisor Sterling Bakker. To start off the hour, though, a conversation with NPR's correspondent in China, Louisa Lim. That follows this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, a look at the growing connections between Americans and Chinese, both on the academic and business fronts. Later in the hour, we'll welcome a University of Iowa business student who, anticipating expanding markets between the two countries, is studying in Shanghai. Then, a conversation with a University of Iowa student from China who has produced a documentary examining the pursuit of the American dream through the eyes of Chinese immigrants in the U.S. But first, a conversation with NPR correspondent Louisa Lim. From her present post in Shanghai, Lim covers news and current affairs in China, South Korea, and Japan. I wanted to start by asking you, give us a behind-the-scenes look at the way you operate in China. We've enjoyed your reports. What are the ways in which working as a journalist in China is different than, say, a journalist in the United States?
Oh, it's really different in so many ways. I mean, I think one thing is the area that we have to cover is so extremely large. And also, there are quite a lot of difficulties that you don't really come across in the US. For example, if you want to interview someone who is a dissident, you might find that they're being watched by security forces. And so you might find difficulties there. For example, a story that I did just the other day about alternative expos. I went to interview a man who was trying to do an online expo of injustice. And when I arrived at his house, my way was barred by these extremely large, extremely loud plainclothes policemen who were basically shouting at me and forcing me to register and all this. And I mean, I was eventually allowed to interview him, but sometimes you do find that you get detained by plainclothes policemen or followed by unmarked cars. And that kind of thing is very normal for journalists operating in China. It's just one of the things that we have to deal with.
So you're constantly monitored when you step out the door, shadowed by these government minders, security forces?
Well, it's not that we are always shadowed. It's really more that if you're covering a very sensitive subject, you might find that you're monitored or shadowed. And so you always have to bear in mind, what are the implications of what you're doing? Will you cause trouble to the people that you're talking to? You know, what are the implications for your sources? And sometimes when you're doing a particularly sensitive story, you might be going to interview someone who really has not had much experience dealing with the Western media, and they don't really know the kind of problems they could cause for themselves. Mm. So, you know, at the same time, you desperately want to cover this story, but you have to sit people down and say, you know, are you really sure that you want to talk to me? Do you realize that you might, you know, this and this and this might happen to you if you talk to me? And you need people to know that there could be consequences. And that's always a very difficult line to draw, because in China, you know, a lot of these lines are very fuzzy. There are a lot of gray areas, and sometimes it's difficult to tell whether you are crossing the line or not.
In the U.S., the press is often viewed, well, when it's working well, as a check on the government, the so-called Fourth Estate, or as a muckraker to uncover corruption, misdeeds. How is that philosophy different in China? How do people see the press differently than we may see it in the U.S.?
Well, the Chinese state-run press is, you know, it's very much an arm of the government. So they will very much be reporting the government line on things. And sometimes they're, you know, nowadays things are changing and they are becoming more able to report on more controversial subjects. But I think that has led to a real difference in opinion. You know, many Chinese look at the Western media and they're not used to this kind of tradition that we have, and they feel like the Western media is picking on China. Of course, that's not the case. We will apply the same standards whether we're in China or in the US, but it's difficult for a Chinese audience to deal with. And so you sometimes do get these confrontations where your behavior is seen to be extreme when in fact it would be very normal in the US. I mean, a recent example that happened to me was I was covering a story about the Shanghai Expo, and there was a lot of talk online about the resemblances between the Shanghai Expo mascot, who's called Hai Bao, and Gumby, the cartoon character. So I went along to a press conference and I asked a question about whether there would be any investigation into the resemblances between the two, and I held up pictures just to show the resemblance that was there, and it caused an absolute sensation. This was all over the Chinese press, all over the internet for about a week, and people kept sending me notes saying, "I support you. That was so brave." But it's not brave. That's our job. But it's so different from how a Chinese journalist would deal with it that sometimes, you know, these things happen.
As I'm sure you're aware, the enrollment of young Chinese in American colleges and universities has increased in many places tremendously. Also, in much higher numbers, Chinese students are studying here in Iowa. What is the chief appeal of the U.S. for Chinese? This sense of brave and a braver approach to an individualistic approach to life that perhaps is not as present in China?
I think so. I mean, I think an American education is really very much seen as something that a lot of young Chinese aspire to. The Chinese education system is still very much by rote, and there is not an awful lot of emphasis placed on sort of initiative and invention. And I think that's really why the U.S. appeals to so many young Chinese. They really see it as a place where they can come and discover themselves and more about themselves, and a really a different approach to learning and education and life itself. So I think, and of course, from a language perspective, a lot of young Chinese do want to learn English, and the U.S. would be their first choice of destination.
Not only colleges and universities in Iowa and elsewhere, but also businesses here in the state reaching out to China, looking at this lucrative, huge consumer market. Would the average Chinese have any idea about Iowa? Say you mentioned Iowa in a person on the street interview. Would they make any associations, do you think?
I have to say probably not at this stage. I think Chinese people very much they're fascinated in everything about the U.S., but they still don't really have a very clear view of the difference from state to state.
Mm-hmm. It is no longer a country of black and white, China, and it's so nice that your reporting, Louisa, is something that delivers a complex and nuanced picture, which raises the question when I'm listening to your reports, such as the recent one on the Expo, the several that you had. When you're in China, does it feel like a communist country or a capitalist one?
That's an interesting question. Actually, it doesn't really feel like either. It's this sort of crazy mix of communism and capitalism. And in some ways, the system in China, it's more capitalistic than the US in some ways, yet you still have some, you know, strict social controls. So, example, in cities, many people still, you know, if you want, you're not allowed to have a second child, or if you did want to have a second child, you would have to follow certain regulations, you would have to apply for permission, all this sort of thing. But China is changing very, very fast, and I think that's why it's such a fascinating place to be. And the conditions also, they really do vary from place to place, from city to city, from village to village. So I think in the West, we do often have this idea that China is this sort of it's run by this monolithic authoritarian government. But in many cases, that no longer is the case. The centralized system, the central government does have difficulty in controlling the situation at the provincial level and in the villages. And there are all these contradictions, all these areas in between. And that's why it's so fascinating to work there as a journalist.
Of course, Chinese Americans have been in this country for many generations. I wonder, though, if in reporting about China to the United States via NPR, if you ever get reaction to your reporting from Chinese Americans. I can imagine perhaps those who immigrated to the U.S. many years ago now don't really recognize China in the way as you describe it in your reporting.
Yes, I think that's the case. I mean, a lot of Chinese Americans have been in the States for generations, actually. And I think when they go back, they're very, very surprised by what they see. And I mean, even for us in China, people like us who live there, we often have this sense that things are changing so fast, we can hardly keep up with it. I mean, something happened to me just a couple of months ago when I was reporting in Gansu, which is a very, very poor province out in northwest China. And I was just interviewing some shepherds out there. And we were in the middle of nowhere. And suddenly I heard the last thing that I expected to hear, which was the Nokia ringtone. And this shepherd whipped their mobile phone from their pocket and started chatting. And I was really surprised. I was with a government official and he said to me, "Look, you see, even here, even in this poor province, even our shepherds have mobile phones nowadays." And I mean, it's true. There's 750 million mobile phone users in China, which is more than half the population nowadays. So things change so fast that sometimes people like us who live in China, we talk about China time. It seems it's moving at a different pace than the rest of the world.
Mm. Most of us know China through the products on our shelves, Louisa. Our store shelves are chock full of products made in China. I wonder, are there any U.S.-made products that are to be found in stores in China?
Well, high-tech products are always popular. Apple, iPads, iPhones, things like that are always popular. But what's really interesting, of course, is the speed of time in which it takes for fake iPhones and iPads to be copied. So those are very popular. But also, you know, consumer products. Chinese, urban Chinese are increasingly brand conscious. So things like Nike trainers are also beginning to be really popular in China, sportswear, that kind of thing. Tastes are changing in China. And I think in the Chinese cities, the people's tastes are becoming more and more like the tastes of consumers in an average American city, too.
Louisa Lim, I want to thank you very much for this conversation. Louisa Lim of NPR joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben. It's been such fun.
Next, a University of Iowa student studying in Shanghai, a Chinese student studying journalism at the University of Iowa, and a faculty advisor who oversees educational partnerships between the two countries. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, looking at the growing connections between Americans and Chinese in the areas of higher education and business as we continue with our hour. We just heard from Louisa Lim, who covers China for NPR from her base in Shanghai. Now we tighten our focus to look at educational connections between China and Iowa. In the past few years, the number of Chinese applicants to American higher education, especially grad schools, has seen a considerable increase. In fact, the past few years have seen a consistent double-digit growth from year to year in grad school applicants from China. Joining me now, Sterling Bakker, a study abroad advisor at the University of Iowa, Devin Jarvis, a junior at the University of Iowa, who is studying finance and Chinese. He's studied in China and will return next fall, and Xin Fong, a University of Iowa student pursuing a master's degree in journalism and has produced a documentary film recently titled The American Dream of the Chinese, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the hour. Sterling, Devin, Xin, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon.
Sterling, let me talk to you first of all with you. You are a study abroad advisor at the University of Iowa, responsible for Asia. We've been hearing about the increase in Asian students coming to the United States for higher education. Is there a corresponding increase in interest by Americans to study abroad in Asia, for example?
I would say that generally speaking, even though the numbers of students going to Asia, it remains relatively low compared to other destinations, the growth that we're seeing, the interest that we're seeing from students regarding Asian destinations is definitely growing every year. I mean, we see the growth 10%, 20% every year, just a few more students in the language programs, a few more classes being offered by the university, which creates this interest. There's definitely a corresponding growth, even though I don't think it's quite as large.
Let me guess, Europe the most popular destination?
Generally speaking, Europe is the most popular destination.
In Asia, what's the most popular destination for students studying abroad?
I would say at this point it flips back and forth between China and Japan. We have a lot of students interested in Chinese. We have a lot of students interested in Japanese language. The two are going back and forth. I would think China is probably growing more while Japan has kind of topped out a little bit. So,
Devin Jarvis, you, I understand, are a native of Fairfield, Iowa?
That is correct.
And you are a junior at the University of Iowa studying finance and Chinese. You've studied in China. When were you in China?
That was the summer of 2008, right before the Olympics. So it was a pretty exciting time to be abroad.
Mm-hmm. How did you first get interested in China?
Initially, I kind of wanted to take a foreign language during my college education. And Chinese just really kind of made sense. I talked with my advisors and, with China becoming a growing world power, especially economically, I really wanted to be able to kind of leverage those language skills into potentially business opportunities further on down the road. So I decided to enroll in first year Chinese freshman year and kind of fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm. So where were you exactly in China?
I studied for 2 months in Tianjin, China. It's a kitty corner from Beijing. So I call it the biggest city no one's ever heard of. So it was a good time.
How many people live in this?
I think it's about between 11 and 12 million people.
And that's quite large.
Yes.
We don't have anything close to that. I guess maybe go to Chicago and find something close to that. So tell us about the neighborhood, the area that you lived in.
I went to the Tianjin University of Technology, and I went there through the University of Iowa's Study Abroad Office. They have a program called Iowa in Tianjin, and they really emphasize getting, first and second year Chinese students to go abroad and really get that immersion environment, kind of set within the first couple of years of studying Chinese. And so I lived in the International Students Dorm, which was right next to campus, and I was enrolled in classes with other Iowa students. And it was really a great opportunity to really build the kind of speaking and listening skills you just can't get without an immersion environment.
So the Chinese that you learned in the classroom here in the United States is quite different than on the street trying to correspond and find your way around and communicate.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you really pick up on the kind of colloquial expressions, as well as up in the north, in northern China, they have a kind of dialect that's a little bit different. But it was a really great opportunity to kind of learn how to say those slang phrases. And now, with kind of the influx of a lot of international students coming here, I can understand them more because I've had that experience to kind of sink or swim in a native environment.
Mm-hmm. In those first days, did you ever have the feeling that perhaps you were in over your head with the language?
Oh, immediately. I mean, it was – luckily I had other friends that were much more fluent than I was, and they kind of helped me get by, trying to buy train tickets to Beijing. And then, the person comes back at you with what time, what price, do you want, a sleeper, whatever you want. And so
– something you're not expecting, and it comes very fast.
Yeah, it comes very fast. And, the lesson in the book that you learn, it's a followed dialogue that, the answer should be this. But when they come back with four more questions, you're just not quite ready for it.
Sheen Fong, you are a graduate student in the School of Journalism at the University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. So tell me, how did your interest in studying abroad begin? You grew up where in China?
I grew up in Kunming, Yunnan, in southwest of China. It's a really long story that how I really got to America. I was actually never really crazy about visiting America like many people do. It was really, my mom's dream. And she majored in English at college in the 1980s, in the early 1980s. And she had a professor who had been to America. And she asked her professor what America was like. And her professor told her, imagine the best world you can imagine. And America is even better than that. So she remembered that ever since. And then 2 decades later, and she and my dad decided to, my mom is a professor in education, so she really wanted me to get my higher education in a Western country. So when I was 17 in 2004, she and my dad decided to send me to study in England, where I finished the second half of my high school and my bachelor's degree. But in 2007, I had an opportunity to study abroad. I had several options, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and America. First of all, I chose Australia because I really wanted to see kangaroos for some stupid reason. And I told my mom that, and my mom said, well, I think you should really see what a superpower is like. Even it's a hegemony, like many people say, you should see what that hegemony is like. Mm-hmm. And that really inspired me. So
come see the hegemony.
Exactly. Okay. Why it's so powerful. You should see why. And then that really inspired me. That's how I got into the exchange program at Illinois State University for one semester. And since then, I really fell in love with American education. And I returned to England, finished my bachelor's degree, and decided to pursue my master's degree here.
So I have to ask you, how did those very very high expectations set by your parents about what it was like in America match up with the reality that you found?
I don't know.
It's okay if you say they didn't meet the expectations.
No, I really don't think so. I think it's not hegemony. It's really some very fundamental values about respecting human nature, respecting human values. And I think that's why it made this country so intriguing to many people around the world.
And those aspects that you just mentioned are different in China or looked at differently than where you come from?
Well, to be honest, I haven't really thought about before I left China, because I left China at a really early age, at 17, and haven't really thought about those questions until I really traveled quite a lot of countries and lived in 3 different countries and then began to realize. I even didn't realize that when I was in England for 4 years and a half. So that was quite interesting.
Sterling Bakker, as a study abroad advisor at the University of Iowa, what is it that you look for in a student to travel abroad? Probably not everyone's cut out for that. Do you have certain questions a person should ask him or herself to see if they're cut out for studying abroad? It's an adventure. It's difficult at times.
It's absolutely difficult, and it's also as equally as rewarding. One of the things that I think is the most important that we ask students is what kind of cultural impact, what kind of cultural knowledge, what kind of relationship to the host culture are you looking for? How involved do you want to be with the culture? Do you want to are you going to be surrounded by Americans? Are you going to be totally immersed in a foreign culture? And that's one thing that can be really important for a student to think about before they leave, because sometimes they're completely cut off from the American host culture, that their home culture that they're used to. And that can feel sometimes isolating if they're an exchange student kind of set up on their own in their own country. And this can be particularly difficult in a culture that's very significantly different, like China. It's probably less noticeable in places in Europe, where the language barrier may not be as difficult, where the culture is, similar enough to America. So,
what percentage of students would you say have a problem with studying abroad, that actually maybe abandon it? Does that happen to students?
I don't see a whole lot of students return because of some issue abroad. It's pretty small, I would say.
Okay. We'll come back in just a moment to continue our discussion about connections between Americans and Chinese. And when we come back, we'll talk about a documentary film that traces profiles of several Chinese Americans. When we return, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, looking at the connections between Americans and Chinese, especially in the area of higher education. My guests, Devin Jarvis, a native of Fairfield, a junior at the University of Iowa, studying finance and Chinese. He's studied in China shortly before the Olympics. He was there for a stint, and he will be returning in the fall. Sheen Fong is with us, a University of Iowa grad student, master's degree in journalism, and the producer of a documentary film, The American Dream of the Chinese. Also with us, Sterling Bakker, a study abroad advisor at the University of Iowa, responsible for Asia. Do you have a personal or a business connection with China? We want to hear from exchange listeners in the remainder of this hour. Tell us your story, a personal or business connection with China. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Let's spend a few minutes, Sheen Fong, talking about your new documentary film. It's part of your master's degree project, I believe.
It's my baby.
it's your baby. The American Dream of the Chinese. Tell us, what was your goal here in this documentary film, which I watched last night and enjoyed very, very much?
Okay, thank you so much. Well, actually, before I really started making this documentary film, there was always a myth that existed in my head. It was a big question. And it happened when I told many people, both Chinese and American, that I wanted to become a journalist in China after I got my master's degree. They all seemed to be extremely surprised. And some of them asked me, "Are you sure?" And some even asked me, "What's wrong with you?" And that really propelled me to think if there's something wrong with me or if there's something wrong with them. So I wanted to find out. And I began to explore what kept people in the United States, especially Chinese. That's the main goal that I wanted to find out by doing this documentary film. That's how it got started.
Mm-hmm. And so in this film, you weave together the profiles of, is it five or six
people? Six characters, yeah.
Six people. Some of them live in the Midwest. Some of them not in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I traveled to six states interviewing these six subjects. They're based in California, Delaware, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, South Carolina, Illinois. So all the places, yeah.
We have a short excerpt from your film to share. This is one of your subjects, Hei Ru Shan. In this clip, he's recounting his coming to America, which happened in the 1970s, shortly after the rapprochement in Sino-American relations. Tell us a little bit about him before we hear this clip.
Mm-hmm. Ru Shanwu is a geophysicist in California, and he is also one of the first 50 Chinese students and scholars China sent to study in the United States in 1978, the first group of Chinese students in the United States.
And here we hear him recounting coming to the United States. This is from the documentary The American Dream of the Chinese by one of my guests, Sheen Fong, the producer.
There were so many overseas Chinese and Americans interested in us. They had had the old, scary Red China image, so they all wanted to visit and interview us. Although I had thought America was a capitalist society with many ugly and evil things, I didn't find it was all that evil. We were staying at the Chinese embassy in Washington, D.C. Deng Xiaoping visited us as soon as he arrived that night. We had photographs taken with him. He was sitting there, and I was sitting very close to him. We were all very excited. Deng Xiaoping reserved some good spots for us to see his speech, so we're at the front rows. This was all on newspapers. In my English class next day, my teacher held up a newspaper. "Hey, Ru Shan, take a look, take a look. That's you."
Take a look. That's you.
An excerpt from The American Dream of the Chinese, their interesting recounting of the 1970s, one of the first group of Chinese to come in to the United States. So, Sheen Fong, you set out on this goal to find out what kept Chinese in America to become Chinese Americans. What did you find out when you compared these different versions of living the American dream among Chinese Americans?
Well, I think what I really found is that dreams really have no nationalities. There's six versions of the American dreams that I explored in this film, and one, like the excerpt you just heard, Ru Shanwu, he never had an American dream. He never had the American dream, and the other character had a broken Chinese dream, and another character had a universal dream. That's Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream. So they're all very different versions of the American dream, and there was just no answer to this question. And finally, myself, I concluded that it's a universal human dream, and that's the question that I wanted to ask my audience, that can dreams only be achieved in America? Can we all have our dreams that we carry them, that dreams have no nationalities? So that's the message I want to send out.
It's fascinating. One of your characters, I don't know if it's the one from Illinois, but she was inspired by Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In her pursuit of the American dream. Interesting that a Chinese would come to America, be inspired by Martin Luther King, and actually that formed her career, her mission.
Exactly.
Tell us about her.
Yeah, she became
Who is she?
Her name is Rui Fangcao, and she is the principal of a Chinese language school in Bloomington Normal, Twin City area in central Illinois. So she came to the United States in the early 1980s because of the open up policy that China just propelled. And then since she came here and she saw many Chinese students, Chinese people's kids want to study Chinese, so she started that Chinese school. And her school later on had one more role, to host Chinese New Year celebration. And that celebration became a community event that involved both Chinese, like 1,000 Chinese and American people each year. And I actually met her in person when I was doing my exchange program in 2007. I was so impressed. She is a really small-sized woman, maybe 5 feet 1, something like that. And the way she manages more than 1,000 people and put them in order doing different things, organizing that Chinese New Year celebration, was just impressive.
And so she's really become a part of the community, a community organizer in the Bloomington Normal area.
Exactly. She is a community leader.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about connections between Chinese and Americans, especially in the area of higher education. Sheen Fong, a University of Iowa grad student, with her new documentary film, The American Dream of the Chinese. One of our guests, along with Devin Jarvis, a native of Fairfield, has studied in China. And also we have Sterling Bacher, a study abroad advisor at the University of Iowa. If you have a question or a comment, you have a personal or business connection with China, a story you'd like to tell us, 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. You know, if I would contemplate studying abroad in China, it would be the language would seem daunting. We always hear, and so few Americans speak Chinese. Devin, wasn't that daunting when you first considered going to study in China? Not only speaking, you know, asking for a beer or whatever you a Chinese beer or whatever food you would want, but to actually learn in a high education setting with using your Chinese language skills. How is your language?
Well, it's coming along, and unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity before starting college to try any classes, so I hit the ground running freshman year. And, you know, it's definitely been a challenge. It's really not that far from English in the structure of the language. However, when it comes to memorizing, you know, 3,000 characters, that's really where, you know, kind of you need to put in the time, and it's a lot of memorization, but I kind of really liked the contrast it presented against my business classes, because my business classes were very, you know, kind of A plus B equals C type things. And then you go into Chinese class and it's, you know, in a different language, you're using a different part of your brain. And we have these, you know, really upbeat TAs that are really happy to teach us. And so I think the program at the University of Iowa was one of the main reasons why I enjoyed studying it. And I had such a good experience when it was, you know, it was the most difficult when you first start, because it's all completely new sounds and you really can't hear it for a long time. But then once you kind of get past the really steep learning curve, you hit this plateau where all of a sudden you can assimilate a lot of new characters and knowledge, and, you know, it really becomes fun.
Mm-hmm. Have you, I imagine you're quite an unusual thing here on campus. There are Chinese students at the University of Iowa campus. Do you ever run into Chinese students who perhaps you surprise with your Chinese linguistic skills?
Oh, all the time. And, you know, the amount of international students coming from China has just like skyrocketed over the past couple of years. And one of my, you know, favorite things to do actually is when I'm sitting at a bus stop is, you know, kind of listening to their conversation and then maybe interject a couple words here and there and, you know, kind of judge their response.
What kind of reactions do you get?
Usually it's surprised, and they're all very gracious. They're like, oh, you speak very well. Oh, you speak Chinese. Why do you speak Chinese? And so actually I've become very fluent at the why I speak Chinese conversation.
Uh-huh.
So I
understand
fun.
You can be quite entertaining as well. You can sing a version of the Lion King's Hakuna Matata in Chinese. I don't want to put you on the spot unless you'd like to sing a few phrases for us in Chinese.
Sure, yeah. Actually, one of the main ways I like to kind of study Chinese is watching Disney movies, because I've already seen them. And they're very simple language, and they have a lot of animation to go along with it. So I guess here goes nothing. Hakuna Matata, Jian Chi Han Yo Yi Si, Cong Qian Zai Kai Shi.
Okay.
That's all you get.
Good. Applause for you. And Xin Feng is very, very pleased by that. Well, Disney is well known in China, of course, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tell us, Sterling Bakker, as a study abroad advisor at the University of Iowa, you've traveled to China for a number of years. What sort of sense do you have of the changes taking place in exchanges between – in higher education between America and the Chinese?
I would say that the exchanges are definitely growing in number. For example, when I showed up at the University of Iowa several years ago, I don't believe we had any official exchanges set up with a Chinese university like we have exchanges in England or exchanges with universities in Japan where we'll send one student, we'll receive one student, that kind of exchange. When I showed up, we didn't have any of those. And now we have kind of three separate exchanges where we're trying to send at least two students to each of those exchanges every year. So, I mean, those by themselves, and those are just happening. Professors are making those connections themselves and kind of bringing those exchange ideas to us before we're going out there. So we're definitely seeing more of an interest, you know, even from the faculty, in the Chinese higher mm-hmm. educational system.
Is this done with any intent into improving the sort of business climate specifically between Iowa and China, or is it not that directly connected?
Well, the business school at the University of Iowa is very internationally minded. I mean, they're so supportive of all the study abroad programs. They're more than happy to help us promote programs, and they're more than happy to have their students study abroad. But it's at this point, we don't really have any kind of focused University of Iowa business classes. That's something that could happen in the future, but we would definitely like to see that, because business school is
like to,
of course.
Reach out to our exchange listeners in the final minutes. You have a personal or business connection with China? Please tell us your story, 1-866-780-9100, or the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Isaac is joining us from Iowa City. Isaac, good afternoon. Welcome to our program. What is your China connection?
In 2008, I was part of a college program that sends students to various countries, and I chose to go to China, and that would have been the fall of 2008. And the unique part about this program was that you would live with host families, and this was the first time that host families were made available in China. And one thing that I found interesting was that I had a host sister who was an English major at a university there, and she had happened to leave one of her student newspapers on the table, and I picked it up. And there was a column that was following a student at the University of Iowa during that semester.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How has that living abroad experience in China changed you? Did you just come back to Iowa and go on with your life, or did it somehow shape your life, your path?
Oh, well, it definitely shaped my path. Preparing to go to China for that semester, I only had a 3-week crash course in Chinese, which was definitely not adequate. And then once I was there, you know, it was always a struggle to try to, you know, build up enough to even begin conversations. But ever since I got back, I've taken more Chinese classes, and I plan to go back and teach there someday.
Well, good. Thank you, Isaac, for sharing your story.
Thanks.
Ken is joining us. Is it from Kelly?
Yes, just south of Ames.
Ken, thank you for joining us. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. The first time I went to China was in August of 2007. I was there for 2 months. and got home October 20th, and I was back in China on the 16th of January, so you can kind of tell I liked being there. Since that time, that first trip, I've been in China three times now, 7.5 months last year, just I'm retired, and just traveling on my own, so I don't have any set schedule or anything like that. I certainly don't travel in tours. That would just be absolutely nuts. But, travel on trains, buses, and so on. And it's absolutely a great way to meet people. Of course, I've been to places like the Great Wall and Tiananmen Square, all that kind of stuff. And they are great. They're nice to see, Xi'an, Terracotta Warriors, and so on. But I wouldn't go back to see those sites. It's the people that really bring me back. And it's just fascinating. People.
Ken, what about the Chinese people appeal to you?
Well, it's the customs culture. I'm of course very interested in them, and they're very interested in me. Not just me, but they're interested in America. And like on trains, any kind of transportation like this, you're always getting people coming up to you and talking. I had an experience walking around down the street in Beijing, and I've had some of this where somebody will tap on your shoulder, maybe want some money. That's pretty uncommon. But I had a guy, for example, one time tap on my shoulder from behind, and I ignored it a little bit. Finally, I turned around, and here he was handing me money. And I thought, well, this is a little odd. But what had happened, money had fallen out of my pocket.
Hmm.
So, sometimes people think, things are not so good there, but they really are very good. You always have the opportunity, many opportunities, requests to stay and teach English. And there certainly are good places to go where you could do that and at the same time learn Chinese.
How is your Chinese, Ken?
What's that?
How is your Chinese? Did you have a problem learning it? Is it still good?
Oh, no. I haven't learned it. I travel alone in some sense, but generally I'm traveling with some young Chinese person, probably 22 or something like that, that speaks some English, and, I'm not too fussy about where I'm going, so, there's a lot of good places to go, so we just travel together for a week or 10 days and, then pick up with somebody else.
Ken, very quickly, our hour's coming to a close. Ken, something else?
Well, it's just the other thing, too, is I communicate daily with people in China on QQ, which is a little bit, chat-type thing, like Skype, and I also use Skype communicating with people. And I really think I get a different sense of, what things are like in China than what, you see on the media. Anyway, it's a great place to travel, and it certainly has shaped some of my views on, American life here. So.
Ken, thank you very much for sharing your experience. Ken calling from Kelly. About 5 minutes left of our program. What I'm seeing here, too, Ken, Devin here, is the real interest, and you would probably say this of a study abroad student, the interest, the emphasis is on the people. You aren't looking for people, Sterling Bakker, who are interested in the sights of China, though they may also be interested in those. It's the immersion, the closeness to the people, the culture, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, we have students visit the Great Wall, visit the Terracotta Warriors, but really they're interested in the things that fascinates them about China. And sometimes it's kind of the cultural differences and the cultural similarities that they'll surprisingly find along the way that they didn't expect to find. Little bits of the language, little bits of, just the daily life that is sometimes similar and is sometimes very different that really attract people.
Devin, what lifestyle differences stuck out for you most as someone coming and growing up in Iowa and then living in China?
I would have to say there's two things. One, the amount of bicycles. Everybody travels around the city, or a majority of people travel around the city on their bicycles. And it's almost like dangerous to ride a bicycle there if you're not like an expert like Lance Armstrong or something, because there's so many in the bike lanes. And that was one of the things that kind of surprised me there. And then also one of the like really good things is that it's really hard to pay for a meal when you go out with your Chinese friends. They have these kind of almost backhanded ways to pay for the meal without you even knowing it. And so, there's a lot of pride taken in, being the one to host the meal and pay for it. And, the first five times I ate with my language partner, He had paid before. Like, I tried to pay early, and he had already gotten it. So
he outwitted you every time. We have just a minute left. I want to leave with a few thoughts about your futures, Xin Feng and Devon. Let's start with you, Xin Feng. What do you want to do with this education in England, now in the United States? Mm-hmm. Where do you want to be in 5 or 10 years with this education?
I'm actually going back to China on the 9th of June for good. I just graduated this weekend. With
congratulations.
My master's. Thank you. So I'm still very, very much looking into a job in the TV market in China. So I want to be a TV journalist. That's my goal.
You want to be a TV journalist in China, based where?
Anywhere. Yeah.
Anywhere
that can get me a job in TV.
Well, we sure hope that you'll come to our shores again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Devon Jarvis, what do you want to do with your business, your finance business degree and Chinese in the future?
What I would really like to do is work for an American financial services firm in one of their satellite offices, perhaps Hong Kong or Shanghai. And I really think that would help me both learn the culture and get a solid skill set to start my career.
Well, it's been fascinating learning about your experiences, your Chinese-American connections. I want to thank you very much. Devon Jarvis, Xin Feng, and Sterling Bakker, the study abroad advisor at the University of Iowa. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. And podcasting on-demand audio available of this program by going to iowapublicradio.org. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.